Hey everybody, welcome to Finding Japan, episode 6, the wet episode, because of a goddamn Chinese umbrella. We're going to do something a little different this time. I have my roommate, colleague, and friend, Alex, here, though he seems to be a bit involved in some Advanced Wars 3 for the... What is that, the
DS?
Game Boy DS Lite right now. So if he seems distant, it's not because he doesn't like y'all.
Yeah.
But Alex is going to share some of the experiences moving into this place, hopefully, if he has some insights. He said he would just talk if he has anything to say. And I told him I was going to do an interview, but I don't know. I'm going to start getting distracted by his game soon. So yeah, today's the wet episode. The reason why is I just got back from Osaka about an hour ago on a little shopping trip, and it just happened to start pouring cats and dogs, and the sky turned green, and it was like Armageddon. People were running around like crazy, and I bought this 105 yen umbrella.
So that makes like 4 or 5 umbrellas in the house now?
Yeah, I think we have, let's see. We got stuck one day because we only thought we had one umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to do a two-man rescue operation to get another umbrella. Or a one-man rescue operation to get an umbrella.
Yeah, you had to get one.
And it came back and you had already had an umbrella. I guess that's the one thing about Japan that's pretty interesting. If you have an umbrella fetish, you can certainly get off here. There's umbrellas everywhere. But yeah, we have 5 umbrellas now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a raincoat.
And a raincoat. It's more like a rain bag. With a, it's a plastic bag with one hole in it you put your head through. So this really cheap umbrella I bought was made of like cloth almost. I don't think it was a rain. I don't think it prevented rain. I think it just deflected the big drops into smaller drops. It was like a rain strainer. The operative goal after about 5 minutes of trying to walk the 10-minute walk back home, as opposed to staying dry, the goal was keep the upper front part of my body that had all of the stuff I had just bought and my DS for the dictionary and everything. Let's keep that dry. And my legs, my back got totally soaked. So I'm in pajama pants now, and they're pretty hot. So feeling good about it.
All right.
Wanted to give everybody a quick update before getting on to today's topics. I think what we're going to try and cover today is a little bit of how Alex and I handled foreign exchange when we got here. We wanted to talk about some Japanese bicycle skills. We had an interesting experience, a couple days ago, eating raw chicken.
That's right.
We're going to talk about that. And if we have time, we're going to get into how freaking expensive it is to commute in Tokyo. And we're finding out now. And then get into the things I think you will only see in Japan. But before that, quick update. We have moved, finally. We're finally moved into the apartment. I think the last audio podcast I had done was from Kamada. And then I did the video podcast. But now we are in Sumida-ku.
That's right.
What does Sumida stand for? Does rice field, right? Sumi?
I am not sure what that means.
We'll have to look that up. Yeah. We'll get back to you on that. But we are no more than 2 blocks away from the Asahi Beer Building, so...
That's right.
We're trying to hook up some kegs, maybe have a keg party here or something. I don't even think they... I haven't seen a keg in Japan yet.
You know, I haven't even seen those, like, the beer vending machines that everyone talks about. I haven't seen any in Tokyo.
I found one.
You did?
I did.
Oh, wow.
But it's in Asakusa. Outside of a liquor store.
Oh man, of all places.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, we're here now. We're about 2 blocks south of the Asahi building. It's a nice area. It's kind of quiet, but it's about a 5-minute walk to the nearest train station. But I don't know. I think I would take the quiet over the bustle of like Shinjuku. And we are really only a 10-minute walk away from everything. I also found a supermarket today and a haircut place, too.
Really? Yep. Okay. I got to hit that up tomorrow.
We did Hanami last weekend. It was, I think, Saturday.
Yeah.
Went out to Edogawabashi, I think.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And there's a river there that heads up towards Waseda University. We met a few friends up there, laid a tarp down and started drinking some sake. And met most of the people who are in our program right now. Terrence from the Kobe Beef Show came all the way up from Kobe. He was up in Tokyo visiting some friends, and he hung out with us that entire night, pretty much. He went to go visit a...
Yeah, we just we went with him until, like, around midnight or so.
Yeah. There was a period of that time where I don't remember anything afterwards. But I do have some pictures that reminded me of a few things that had happened. So that was a lot of fun. I'm going to be posting a video about that probably maybe the next episode, if not the following one. I want to do a little more video stuff, and I hope to do more now that I found out that the cell phone does video. I just have to get an SD card and get it all transferred over to the computer. But in the meantime, there's another good Japanese podcast, and I believe it's called Bicycle Sidewalk. I'm going to look at my iPod right now. The video won't be on my iPod. But I don't know the gentleman's name. I'll put it in the show notes. But he does 2 to 3 minute clips of just random things in Japan that he encounters. I think one time he was at a park and he saw a couple guys like doing this like rap jazz thing, and he just recorded that. And then there was another time where he was just riding his bike down the street, and he recorded that. So it's kind of like everyday life in Japan, short video clips. So definitely check that out. I'm not going to try to duplicate that by all means. I don't really think I have the time to do a lot of video episodes, but things I find interesting, I may put up there. Oh, one other thing, a quick update. Finally got my alien registration card yesterday and got the address changed. Alex had some pretty good comments yesterday about Japanese bureaucracy, and I think I'm going to tap his brain for a different thing I want to do on Japanese bureaucracy. Did you ever see Bowling for Columbine? That South Park thing was a short history of the United States. It's like a little animated thing.
Bowling for Columbine? I thought...
It was a Michael Moore movie. Right, right. And in the middle of it, there was a little South Park-like... It was done by the guys from South Park. It was a little animation.
I watched it, but I don't really recall that particular part.
I wanted to put something together like that for Japanese bureaucracy, sort of like a 30-second condensed illustrated version of how it's just out of control. So hopefully Alex will help me with that later this week. Let's see, what else? I think that's it for a quick update. All right. So let's move on to foreign exchange. If you do come to Tokyo and you're going to stay for... maybe a couple weeks or so, you are going to have to deal with foreign exchange. I think if you're coming here short term, you can get away with traveler's checks. And even if you're planning on staying in Tokyo or Osaka or a metro area, an ATM card and a credit card will get you by. Your credit card company may charge you a percentage. But for vacation, most people won't go through the issue. Would rather get charged 3% than carry, you know, $2,000 in cash with them. But if you're going to stay here for a month or more, you're going to encounter foreign exchange. Now, you can do foreign exchange at quite a few places, actually. The first place you'll encounter is a booth at Narita Airport. If you go out of the international exit part where people can wait for you and take a right, there's a booth right there. You can just fill out a form and get everything done in one shot. However, we found out that a lot of those places charge an exorbitant spread on the actual exchange rate. So if the exchange rate is, say, 118 yen per dollar, a place like that may give you 112, taking 6 yen off every dollar, which definitely adds up if you're changing out like $2,000 or $3,000. I think when I arrived, I had to have enough to cover a couple months' rent and utilities and getting things set up, so we had quite a bit of money. You had the same deal, right?
Yeah, I brought just under $3,000, actually. I never carry that much cash on me, but you know, if you're gonna do it, I think Tokyo is a pretty safe place.
Yeah, I didn't feel too threatened. Yeah. I was definitely watching my stuff, but I didn't feel like someone was gonna come and mug me. Mm-hmm. That only happens at the Imperial Palace.
Right.
Yeah. if you don't know what I mean, I talked about that before. The last time I was in Japan a year and a half ago, I got mugged by a gaijin, but you couldn't really call that. It was like a pseudo mugging, but I think I wrote about it before, so I don't know. If I get enough people asking about it, maybe I'll repeat that story. But anyway, you can also do exchange at most banks. I think Mizuho, Citibank, there's a Mitsubishi Bank. It's like MMFG or MMUFG, MMUG. It's the red one. It's got like a red logo.
Yeah, I don't remember what exactly it stands for.
And I think you can also do foreign exchange at most post offices. Probably some of the ones in the rural areas you wouldn't be able to do, but ones that are in most metro areas will do some sort of foreign exchange.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. But if you are at Tokyo Station, check out this place. I did my research maybe about 2 weeks ago, and this place had the best prices in terms of exchange. It wasn't the exact exchange rate, but I think they only took about 2 yen off, as opposed to most of these other places. And I'm probably going to butcher the name, but I believe the place is called Daigakuya. And if you take the Yaseu Central exit and go right across the street, you can't miss it. The place will not look like a foreign currency exchange place. It'll look more like a, I don't know, you went there. It looks more like a ticket broker place, or like a, I don't know.
Right. Like a touring place. That's basically what they do. They sell tickets to different events. But I guess what happens is they have a surplus of cash because of that, so they can do foreign exchange.
I think when I went there, they gave me 1.16 when the exchange rate was about 1.18. And you, yeah, something. So did you check the exchange rate that day?
I didn't know what it was, but it gave me, I think, 1.16.
I don't think it's really changed all that much in the past week or so. I know right before we left, the exchange rate went hugely in our favor. It was really cool, yeah. When I had checked before I left, I think it was at about 110 or 112. It makes up for the fact that we had to pay so much money to take all the trains. So, I don't know. There you go. I can't really speak for some of the other areas of Japan, but I definitely know that in Tokyo, Daigakuya, across the street from the Yaseo Central exit to Tokyo Station, is by far the cheapest that I've been able to find. If anyone's listening knows of a place that can do even better, let me know and I'll correct the show notes later. There you go. That's foreign exchange. Now we can move on to Japanese bicycle skills. I think I'm going to spell that skills. S-K-E-E-L-S. Skills. I don't know, man. I've seen everything on bikes lately.
Well, I always liked how the old ladies can do the one-legged mount onto the bike.
Oh, I haven't seen that yet.
You see it all the time.
One-legged mount. Can you describe it?
Well, they basically jump on and, but they're like kind of coasting along at first, like you're riding a scooter almost.
They put their like outer leg on, or do they like put their inner leg on the outside of the bike and then sort of put their butt on it and flip it over?
No, I mean your foot is on the pedal that it's supposed to be on.
Oh, okay.
And then one foot is kind of like, you know, pushing off on the ground. Just kind of like vault on over like that.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
Yeah. I've never been able to do that. But.
My favorite is the umbrella. The one hand on the handlebar, the one hand with the umbrella. Mm-hmm. And I actually think that it's a requirement to have a clear umbrella to ride a bike. I don't know how you could do it with an opaque umbrella, or an umbrella that you couldn't see through. Maybe a few people have done it, but man, that's so hard. I could barely ride a bike with one hand in this city anyway.
I can't do that.
Overall, I think I've just been really impressed with the agility of everybody. Usually, in the U.S., it's kids that are like really good at bikes. You know, they're on their bikes all day during the summer, hanging out with their friends. But here, man, you see the 60-year-old businessman in a suit on a bike. You see the mother with a kid in the basket and a kid in the back and holding a kid, riding a bike. What else have I seen? I've seen delivery guys with like those huge baskets in one hand.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I think they almost have to tilt the bike in order to keep balance. It's out of control. I've seen pretty much everything, but ironically, I haven't seen a bike accident yet. And you think you would with so many people here.
Yeah, yeah. I think, especially on the sidewalks.
Yeah.
When it's like, I mean, I've had some near misses, I think, when we're walking and, you know, you don't even notice them. They just zoom right by you.
Yeah. I'm afraid one day I'm going to, like, yawn.
Oh, I know.
And clothesline somebody.
I could totally see it happening. Because a lot of them don't ring their bells.
When
they zoom right by you. Because I guess they don't expect you to move. But
some of them do. Which is nice if you don't have, like, your MP3 player plugged in your head or whatever. Overall, though, I think they're fairly polite and they share the sidewalk pretty well with pedestrians. Most...
Yeah,
bikes, I think kind of the general rule is if your vehicle's not motorized, it's okay to be on the sidewalk.
Yeah, I rarely see people ride their bikes on the road.
Yeah, if any time it's to like get around a huge group of people or something. But yeah, the skill of Japanese people in riding bikes, especially in this city, is just incredible. You know what we should do? I'm pointing at Alex like everybody can see, but we'd been talking about going to a bike shop that a friend had recommended near Waseda University.
Right.
And we're going to get some bikes. And obviously, you know, we can't take the bikes on the train, though. Mm. Maybe we could if they were, like, fold-up bikes, but...
Yeah. Like, Scott was saying, it's like, if you can put your arms around it, he said you can bring it on the train or something like that.
Mm. So if it's a fold-up bike, you could probably do that.
It'd probably be okay.
We wouldn't want to take a bike on the train. We probably could, but... So we're guessing we're going to have to ride the bikes back to our houses, but I should bring the camera that day and, like, strap it onto my head or, I don't know, figure out some way to kind of show people what it's like.
Oh, but we need to get raccoon helmets.
Yeah. We get, like, I haven't seen anyone wearing a helmet with a bike, though. That's the other thing, no helmets.
You're right. It's, yeah. I think only little kids have to wear helmets.
I'm not sure what the laws might be like, but it's certainly much, much different
than the U.S. Yeah, that's true. Definitely. Haven't seen any helmets.
And I think in the U.S. and most cities, too, it's illegal to ride a bike on the sidewalk. You have to share the road with cars. So quite different out here. So maybe one day there's a pretty busy intersection by where we live. Maybe I'll just set up the camera and, like, drink a coffee and watch people ride bikes back and forth.
Yeah, that'd be pretty interesting.
Show people what that's like. But yeah, so Japanese bicycle skills. If you come here, just, I don't know, there's got to be bike rental places. That'd be a fun experience if you come here as a tourist to try and ride a bike around.
You know, you could probably rent a bike from one of those stores. Because that's what I did when I was up in Sapporo for the summer.
Oh, you actually rented a bike there?
The guy was selling them, but I told him I was only going to be there for a week. So he says, you know, okay, you can rent. You know, you pay $5,000 up front, and then when you return the bike, I'll give you like half of that back.
Oh, that's not bad. Yeah. For a week if you're there visiting.
Yeah, so that's what I did.
Did you find that Sapporo was a lot different than Tokyo in terms of the bike skills and the bike style and just how easy it was to get around?
I don't know if there's like a Hokkaido style bike. There's
a Hokkaido Jitensha Kata.
Yeah. No, but Sapporo is also a very bicycle-friendly town.
Really?
Yeah. Because the layout in Sapporo is very different from every other Japanese city. Because they laid it out in, like, grids. It's, like, blocks. Mm-hmm. Really, really square. So it's very different from, like, Tokyo.
Tokyo's kind of like a mess.
Yeah,
like
it's all over the place.
Amalgamation of just someone decided to put a street through here. Mm-hmm. And...
Yeah, but Sapporo is very well laid out.
I don't know. It's difficult for me to say that Tokyo is well designed for bicycles. They have those bicycle lanes in the side, well, in the crosswalks, but people don't religiously use them only for bicycles.
No, they don't. So, I mean, like the sidewalks down here, you know, you notice, right? Some parts are designated for bikes only.
Right. Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, it's true. No one really follows that.
There's definitely a symbiotic relationship between the bicycle and the bicycle rider and the pedestrians.
Yeah.
I think it's because most bicycle riders are also pedestrians.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so...
Other parts during the day, you know, after they take the bike to the... So they can relate, they know what it's like. Whereas most people in the U.S., I think, just probably, you know, ride a bike from point A to point B and don't really walk any part of that route as a pedestrian as well.
Yeah, definitely.
So there you go. Bicycle styles. Okay. Let's move on to the raw chicken.
Raw chicken.
Chicken sashimi experience. I don't know, I think it was like Wednesday, last week.
Yeah.
It had to be Thursday because we had just moved here. Mm-hmm. And we were looking for something to eat. And I swear to God, I don't know much kanji in Japanese. So sometimes eating at more traditional places
is
a bit difficult, can get a little tough. And we were in Kurumai, right across the river.
Yeah, it's around here.
And we ate at a place called Hiden.
Mm-hmm.
I think, it's called Hiden.
Yeah.
I remember that because I'm like, it's hidden. And it was a I don't even know how to describe it. It seemed like it was a, it was like a Katoriniku place.
Yakitori.
Oh yes, thank you. Yakitori
place. Well, they had, that's what they had on the outside. We saw like the pictures. They had posters. Yeah. They're all like yakitori, so I assume that's what it was.
But they had so much more. It wasn't just yakitori. A lot of places in Japan will just have one thing or one kind of thing, like yakiniku or yakitori or gyoza or dumplings. This place was, I don't know, just weird. So we got the menu, and I don't think you could have read much of it either.
Well, see, I recognized the hinajidori because back when I lived in Akita, well, look, Japan has three types of really famous domestic chickens. There's three, like, species of chicken that are native to Japan. They're really famous because they're supposed to be delicious. And one of them is the Hinai chicken.
The Hinai chicken.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that place, that town was like 5 minutes from where I lived in Akita. So that's why I recognized the kanji.
Oh, okay.
So I'm like, oh, okay, you know, Hinajidori, you know. It's famous. We gotta hit this up, you know? Yeah. That's why I ordered it.
And then I couldn't read much on the menu, so I ordered one of the few things I could read, which was the hata hata.
That's right.
So we sat down, and the person who was cooking, there was like a small glass enclosure, and they were cooking the yakitori, traditionally. It was taking quite a while for it to come, so we got this small bowl of stuff, and it looked like, I don't know, it kind of looked like salmon or like a cod or...
Yeah.
It was bizarre. I had a couple bites of it. I'm like, wow, this is really good. I wonder what this is.
I know, you're like, I don't know what kind of fish this is, but...
It's not bad. Yeah. It's a little... It had like a little vinegar sauce on it and like some... A bit of roe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And some greens and like there's cucumbers and radish and stuff in there. And I'm like, this is not bad. And I had thought that it was because we were waiting so long for our food.
Right, yeah.
So then the hata hata comes out, and I didn't realize that the hata hata is just an entire fish, maybe about 6 inches long, head to tail, a little salted, but just grilled, straight up grilled. And I'd been watching that fish grill right in front of me for about 10 minutes, and I'm like, oh man, I'm glad I didn't order that. So immediately when that came, I kind of looked at you and I'm like, dude, I think that's the hinajidori.
Yeah.
And you're like, nah, dude, this isn't cooked.
I was pretty sure it was the yakitori. That's what I was like hoping for. Yeah. No, actually, when I saw it, I kind of had that really bad premonition.
You did?
Yeah. Because it wasn't fish, man. I could tell.
Now, we had taken a while, we looked at the kanji, and it was like a different kanji for raw after we looked at it, right? And I can't visualize it, but if I ever see it again, I'll know it.
Well, it's funny because there's a different character for raw. It's like nama, for like raw egg, would be like nama tamago.
So right. It's almost like the kanji for life.
It is, yeah, right? It is the same one.
With like three horizontal bars, one long middle bar, and then like on the left side, the top one, there's a small.
Yeah, that's the one.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's also the kanji in birth certificate, I found out today because I went up to City Hall.
Yeah.
It's out there.
Mm-hmm.
So, starting to recognize some more. It's good.
Yeah.
That's usually the kanji for raw.
That's the one I usually recognize.
This had something different, so.
Yeah. I keep thinking it was a character for sashimi, but I keep meaning to look that up, but I didn't.
We'll have to.
Yeah.
You know, when we're done with this, take a look and look it up, and I'll put it in there so people can look out for, watch out for that character, because it definitely means raw in the context of a restaurant.
Yeah.
I don't know. After tasting the chicken, I despite being a little scared that I might, you know, be spending a lot of time in the toilet and in bed for the next couple of days, it was really good. I was impressed. I would have it again, I think.
You would?
I think I would. I didn't get sick.
Uh-huh.
And it was good.
I would make other people eat it, but I don't know if I would eat it anymore.
You would make other people eat it?
Yeah. If people come to Japan, that's what I'm making them eat.
If you ever come to Japan and you visit us and Alex takes you out to dinner at a place called Hiden, just, you've been warned.
They had all sorts of raw meat there, though.
Yeah,
they had like raw horse, raw liver.
I've had raw horse before, but
they had some raw pork too. I don't know about that.
Given the choice of raw liver, raw like chicken hearts, right. That stuff, was the liver chicken? Probably.
Yeah, I think so.
Raw horse. We're going to leave raw fish out of the equation there. Mm-hmm. That same raw chicken again. And let's see what else. I can't think of any other sort of disgusting raw thing. Maybe like raw aardvark. Okay. Out of all those. Which would you eat first?
You know, I think I would go for the chicken still.
See? Yeah, that's good.
I don't know if it was good, but...
Yeah. The one time I had raw horse, I don't think I... No, yeah, I didn't know it was raw horse until after I was done eating it. Which I think is good in a lot of ways. If I had known that was raw chicken before I had 4 or 5 pieces of it, I don't think I would have eaten it. I would have tried it, but then I would have been like, oh, okay, I'm done. I'm gonna.
Well, see, after I found out what it was, I kind of... didn't want to eat it anymore.
I know, you totally stopped. Yeah,
which is kind of a strange reaction. Because when I first ate it myself, I didn't think it was that bad.
And what was interesting too, after we had sort of come to the fact that, yeah, that was raw chicken, my fish looked so much better. I wouldn't eat a fish with just, you know, the whole head and everything. Yeah. And not usually. And the fish was good too.
It was. I was so surprised. No, it was good, yeah. But I wondered, I think they cleaned it out though, didn't they?
Yeah, but there were still... The fish was such that the bones were thin enough where you could eat some of the bones and it wouldn't, you know, scratch your throat or do anything, but you had to pretty much avoid the spine.
Yeah, that's the only part you have to take out. Yeah. I think some people eat the head, too.
I couldn't do that. I don't know what there is to eat in that. So, anyway, so it was a good experience. We both tried some food we probably wouldn't have eaten otherwise, and it was good, so...
That's true.
Maybe we learned something. We learned what the alternate kanji for raw is. I think I was going to do a whole thing on like cute versus cool in Japan, but I think maybe I'll do like a whole other episode on that, collect some more information.
Yeah, you can definitely look into it.
There's so much. Every day, I was just before we had started this show, I was talking to Alex saying, you know, a lot of times I think Japanese will take cute over cool when in other countries those things should be cool. And one particular instance I had thought of was a car ad for a car dealership I saw where all the cars were cute little puffy white clouds, and it was like something like happy car dealership, you know, buy your car and be happy, and it was so cute. You just felt like nice and warm and fuzzy inside. And you know, and I don't think that would fly in the U.S.
No. But I thought of a really interesting example, actually.
What's that?
Well, I won't go into too much detail this time.
Okay. Well, you just want to mention it, and then we'll do it in more detail later. Okay. Yeah.
Well, it's basically this model, Leia Dizon, and, like, she originally started in the U.S., but then she came over to Japan, like, this in last year. And her style completely changed, you know? And it's interesting to see, you know, how she became popular here is completely different from what got her somewhat famous in the U.S. compared to here.
Okay, we'll have to look into that. Maybe we'll do a video episode of that. Was she in, like, TV commercials and stuff? Can we find some video of her?
You can probably find video of her here.
All right.
I've seen a few on YouTube and stuff.
We'll see if we can pull that together. Yeah. I think we can pull off some YouTube clips and put them in a video. It's probably illegal somewhere. If we get shut down, it's free press. Anyway, for today's quick shortened version of things you only see in Japan, I was coming out of City Hall after changing my address today, and I was walking by a bakery we had saw, and they had all these different types of really cheap, really good-looking pastries. And the one that I saw was called Buta-kun. Mm-hmm. And Buta is pig, and kun is sort of a diminutive, you know, name... postfix or whatever you call it. You put it after a name, like San. Usually, kun's usually used for people you're familiar with who are lower status or children. Mm-hmm. So, or really good friends and, I don't know, kind of weird. Chan is usually for friends, but...
Well, kun is usually for guys.
Guys?
Because you would never use kun on a girl.
Really?
Yeah,
I didn't know that. Okay.
Well, I mean, I've heard it used, like, maybe once or twice for a girl, but
there's gotta be something weird going on there.
Yeah.
Okay, so
yeah, usually for boys.
Usually for boys.
Like yeah, but kids.
Like kids, yeah. Like about waist high kids.
Right.
Yeah. After they get above the belt, you know, you gotta start calling right. Chan or.
Well, I don't know about that, but yeah.
So anyway, there should be a picture on the post. You'll see it, and it was just a cute little muffin in the shape of a pig, and they had raised up the middle nose part of it, and they had put little chocolate chips for the eyes and little ear things, so you can see a picture of it there. And on the inside, it was all custard, and it was really good. So. Butakun, and it's a male pig, and it was delicious. So, I'll have to stop back there. They had like some, I swear to God, I think they were called hot donuts.
Uh-huh.
And they were like a pastry wrapped around a hot dog. But I hope it wasn't sweet, because that would be a little odd.
No, it's the hot dog bun.
It's the hot dog bun?
Yeah, you've never had it?
It looks like a donut with a hot dog in it.
That's a staple in Asian bakeries.
Wow. All right.
Seriously.
I've never had that. I'll have to go try that. So that's Butakun. Probably, I don't think you would see him. Would you see Butakun in Thailand or Hong Kong? Maybe.
You might see it in Hong Kong or Thailand. But that's because they copy a lot of Japanese stuff.
Okay.
Especially for their bakeries.
So seen here first, then, at least. If you see Butakun anywhere else, they probably are listening here and got the idea from me, and I stole it from someone who made Butakun. So there you go. I think that's it for this episode. I want to thank Alex for joining me. This has actually been cool. Welcome. I think it makes for better material.
Yeah.
You were saying before it's probably a lot better when you have, like, two people to do it.
Well, that's what I read. Some guy was doing a guide to podcasting, and he said, like, oh, makes it a little more interesting. I don't know if that's true or not.
Hmm. We'll have to do like a morning show version where we crank call people and play dumb songs.
Exactly.
Talk about the news and then have like, you know, honking horn sound effects in the background.
I'll do the celebrity gossip.
The celebrity gossip. Hopefully it'll never come to that point. Thanks for listening. This has been a long one, but I want to thank Alex for joining me, taking the time out of his busy evening of Advance Wars.
Definitely.
Things are kind of slow right now.
Yeah.
But
I think they'll pick up.
I think they will.
Work and everything.
My schedule next week is like a solid block from like 7 in the morning to like 7 at night. So I'm hoping. I don't know. I'm definitely have time to keep the podcasts up. I think what I'll probably do is collect more material and just put it together during the week than taking the hour to sit down and talk about it.
Yeah.
So hopefully we'll do more of this. I will post the Hanami video probably sometime by the end of this week, or if not by the end of this week, by the weekend. It's Tuesday night. It's Wednesday night. Japan Standard Time now. So this will probably be posted to the States just before lunch on Wednesday. And I'm going to be meeting Scott Lockman from Tokyo Calling tomorrow, and if the weather sticks with us here. And hopefully do another dual podcast with him. I think we're going to interview each other or do something. I've never met the guy, but I've listened to his voice for like 2 years. It's bizarre. That'd be an
interesting experience.
He seems like a cool cat, so I'm really looking forward to meeting him. And then I'm going to get a little geeky in another episode and talk a little bit about Twitter and Justin TV. Got some thoughts on that. I guess a lot of the podcasting community has been getting into that. I don't know if it's all it's cracked up to be, but I'm going to share those thoughts later. So, again, thanks for listening. Have a great evening, day, wherever you are. And thank you, Alex. And
どういたしまして。
ありがとうございました。Thank you. Good night.